Hello, everyone. Welcome to the Shabbat program, the Torah study of Yada Yah Radio. Hi, Larry. Hi, James.
Good evening.
Hi. Hi. Those of you who have been reading the chat room know that today we had an interesting 2 hours with IQR Rasuli, followed by a wonderful hour with Larry, Don, and Glenn. I do want to speak a little bit about the discussion on the Shattering Myths program before we begin in the Torah, because, you know, as difficult as it was initially for all of us to give up on patriotism and give up on politics and say adios to religion, I mean, now it's just, oh, God, good riddance. Can you imagine how much better it is where we sit now? It just put yourself for a moment back where we once were and try to justify all of the money and all of the lives that we squandered in the invasion of Iraq. 7,000 American lives, hundreds of thousands of Iraqi lives, maybe as many as 700,000 to a million, and somewhere between $3 trillion and $5 trillion dollars of our national treasury.
Yeah, that's just broke the bank. It's over with.
To go into Iraq because we didn't like Saddam Hussein. And think now what we got for those 7,000 American lives, the 500,000 Iraqi lives, and the $4 trillion. All that weaponry. F-16 aircraft, Apaches, tanks, they're all now in the hands of ISIS, the Islamic State of Iraq.
And we made whoever manufactured them very wealthy at the same time. And it's just been a wonderful experience, I'm sure. I mean, I've got right here where Dennis posted a guy from the Tea Party, and he's holding a sign, and you know, he's one of these guys with one leg. He said, "I'm a wounded warrior that wants to make my supportive wife's dream come true in 2014 and meet President George W. Bush."
Wow.
And when you open it up, it says right here, "All your donations made this wounded warrior's dream come true. He got to meet with George W. Bush and Laura. Thank you for making it happen." At first, I thought he was being sarcastic.
Yeah.
I see now. This was real. And right. So the question would be, if a tree fell on his head and nobody else was around, would it make a noise? And I'm guessing not. So there it is.
No, but be just imagine being that lost. That you haven't, but you still, after all of this, you can't put together the pieces that George Bush lied. The President of the United States deliberately and knowingly lied to the American people about the presence of Al-Qaeda in Iraq. They weren't there. About the weapons of mass destruction in Iraq. They weren't there. About the idea that that removing Saddam Hussein would be better for Iraq and better for America, when it obviously was not true. And that we were winning in Iraq and that our troops had accomplished the mission, and that their sacrifice of blood and coin was somehow worthwhile. And now look, what do we have? And it was inevitable. This state that we find ourselves in now could not be avoided. It was absolutely inevitable. And it's far worse than what we're witnessing. It's not just that all of that weaponry has gone to fundamentalist Muslims. I mean, it's not just that we have made those who despise us infinitely more capable of harming us, and that we sacrificed thousands of American lives and trillions of dollars of American treasure in the process. It's that this is just part of what's going to happen. It's not going to stay contained in Iraq.
Nope. Let's see, you got it in Iraq. You've got it in Syria. You got it in Egypt.
Yep.
You got it in Libya.
Yep.
Got
it in Pakistan.
Going
got it in Afghanistan.
Yeah. That's right. Yeah, don't let me leave those out. You're right. I almost did, and
yep.
That's going to move.
Not in Lebanon.
Well,
not in Lebanon. It's been not in the West
forever.
Bank of Israel. Got it in Somalia.
I don't mean
got
to
it
laugh.
In Sudan.
I mean, it's
got
it's
it in Nigeria.
Eastern
got it in Car. Got it in Libya. Yeah.
You know, I mean, the Keystone Cops could do a better job if it wasn't intentional. That's all I can tell you.
You know, it is moments like this where you do have to wonder, is there any chance that they could have collectively been that stupid? You know, if you have on the opposite side of the aisle, John McClown, and then Barack Hussein Obama, and collectively pursuing the same stupid, counterproductive, suicidal strategy. It is almost as if they're singing out of the same hymnal.
Yeah. And I just it's hard for me to imagine that people stand up there and believe it. I look at this wounded warrior fellow whose dream was to thank the guy that got his leg blown off. And
this whole idea of a wounded warrior, why is it good to be a warrior? Why is that good?
No,
I read the Torah. The Torah says don't do that stuff.
Well, you know, I'm sitting here, I'm looking at it, and I got to tell you, he reminds me. I was watching a Phil Donahue show way back in the day. I used to see what my enemies were up to, and I was watching it, and they had a group on the stage. They were black, militant, female lesbians.
Oh boy.
Okay, get it? That's how they define themselves. And I remember watching this little white male college kid stand up and go, is there anything I can do to further your cause? You know,
wow.
You know, I mean, that's where we've come to, I suppose. And
yeah,
I guess I goes
to,
you know.
Today I was reading an article. There's a young woman, she was 9 years old when her father decided that rather than raising her, he would go off and play war. It was more fun for him to go off and play war in Iraq and Afghanistan. And that was his choice. So he left his daughter while he was off playing war. And after he finished playing war, he said, you know, this is so much fun. I'm going to go join the CIA. So he did.
Uh-huh.
And then he was in northern Afghanistan right after America invaded and was interrogating, which means he was torturing, the Muslims in Afghanistan.
Mm-hmm.
And the Muslims in Afghanistan didn't like being tortured.
No,
so
you're kidding.
No, they really didn't. They didn't like being tortured. And they responded by killing their torturers. And so this girl's father.
Outrageous.
Yeah, this girl's father was killed. You know who killed the girl's father? One of the five Taliban members that Obama just released. Now, who was really wrong in this? Was Obama wrong in releasing the murderer of this girl's father, who was part of the CIA? Was the CIA wrong in torturing the Afghanis in their country after we invaded? Or was the Afghanis wrong in killing the guy that was torturing them in their country?
Well, if I were an Afghani and I were being tortured by outsiders in my country,
right.
I'd want to kill them.
Yeah.
That's my answer to you. I mean,
yeah.
You know, put like
yeah,
that.
Among the three, which is interesting here, among the three in terms of guilt, the Afghani that was in Guantanamo that killed the American CIA operative is actually the least guilty of the three. Isn't that amazing? Now, this girl seems to understand that.
Closer
with her dad, so I don't blame her, but nonetheless, you know, if you're in an act of war, your country invades your country, and you didn't do anything to deserve being invaded. The Afghanis didn't. And America invades your country and starts torturing you. You don't think that you have the right to slay your torturers?
Well, if you're asking me,
yeah,
I want to kill. I would want to kill.
You have every right.
Absolutely. Yeah.
You know, if I'm looking at it from a Torah perspective, of course I got the writing. By the way, one of the things that our friend, the expat Lisa, down in the Commonwealth of Dominica brought up to me last night was that there are now a million, which is 10% anyway, Chinese that are now Islamic, and that's the fastest growing religion in China. That was shocking to me. I always looked at them as a bunch of Buddhists over there. You know.
Yeah, I don't think it's that number. I did a study on it not too long ago, and I realized that there are an enormous quantity of Muslims in China because of the size of China, and much of China abuts, I should say, Afghanistan and Turkmenistan and those areas. So it's where the Mongols came through, and of course the last of the Mongol barbarians was Tamerlane, who used Islam to be the most ruthless by far the Mongol raiders. And so there is a legacy of Islam there because of Tamerlane. But at 10%, I mean, I don't know what the number is now in China, but I would guess that China is about, 1.4, 1.5 billion people?
Oh, I was guessing it was a billion people. I didn't know it was one and a half billion people.
Yeah, I think it's about 1.5 billion. And I don't
know.
They were
saying there was 100 million of them. I don't know if it's true or not.
Yeah, I'll go and check my research again. That wasn't the number that strikes me. At least in 2012, the last time that I saw the numbers being published, it is a huge Muslim population. But 10% of the country—that's a lot. Yeah, I think the Muslims are only half the population of that particular region because they brought so many Chinese into that region. But there is no question that China has an enormous Islamic population and problem. But today, folks, what the basic story was on Shattering Myths, and we'll get to Psalm 119, is that what is happening right now in Iraq is catastrophic to American policy, to the American military, to American politics, to American prestige. We got our clock cleaned. And there is no way to resolve the problem. It is likely that Iraq is going to replicate Syria, but in Iraq it's principally going to be, well, it's going to be a very similar thing. It's going to be Sunnis opposing their government, and the Sunnis are going to be armed to the teeth, and it is going to be vicious. And so
the Shias do make up the largest percentage of Iraq, I believe.
Yeah, not in Syria, no. In Iraq, yes. Yeah, in Iraq,
yeah.
Yes. Syria, no.
Mm-hmm.
And so the only way the problem could be resolved is if the Kurds have their own country in the north, the Sunnis have their own country in the west, and the Shias have their own country in the east. But it's not going to happen that way. They're just going to continue to slaughter each other, and they're going to use American weapons to do so. And they'll continue this great jihad in what right now is Iraq, Syria. The terrorist organization, the Islamic organization, has it right. It is the Islamic State of Iraq and Syria, and it's going to continue to be a place of great annihilation, genocide, until such time as the Sunnis finally prevail, and they will prevail in both countries over time. And then they'll go from there and terrorize the rest of the world. What we're witnessing right now is the end of civilization as we know it. And there's only one way out. Adoption in the covenant. That's it.
The old Hezekiah plan. Yeah.
The Hezekiah plan made personal, because while the Hezekiah plan would work for any country today, there isn't any country that's even Israel that's even remotely close to deploying it. But the Hezekiah plan applied to one's own
No,
family.
That was a very good point. That was a cogent point somebody made on the show today. I don't know if it was Glenn or...
Yeah, I think it was Glenn.
Who? Yeah, the Hezekiah plan is really wonderful, but it's... Or maybe it was you. But it's going to have to be a choice of a single individual. And that's
right.
That's where it's step-up time, because that's where you're going to trust in Yahweh, and that's going to be the end of it. And that's where it's going to go. That,
you know, when,
or you can trust in whatever you're used to trusting in. You're going to lose.
When the 119th Psalm was written, there were two great foes that Dode was facing. It isn't dissimilar to the world today. At that time, the Philistines were a powerful entity. And it just wasn't the Philistines. Behind the Philistines were the Egyptians. And the Egyptians, you know, were much stronger than Israel. And to the north, you had the Hittites. And to the east, you had the Assyrians. So this little fledgling country was surrounded by very formidable foes. And at the time, the most lethal of the foes, and the closest of these lethal foes, was the Philistines down there in Gaza. And so, you know, we know Dode because he became famous for having defeated the most able Philistine warrior, Goliath. But in addition to that, Dode was also fighting the political and religious establishment of Israel. He opted out, and everyone else opted in. And so he was not just fighting Saul, and the religious establishment, but he was also at war at the time with the Philistines. So it was a really dangerous time. And David found his comfort and found his answers in the Torah, which means that it's not just the Hezekiah plan. It's the Dode plan. And in the case of Dode, it was individual. You know, Hezekiah was for the nation of Yehuda. It wasn't for the nation of Israel. Israel was already gone. So it's just for the kingdom of Yehuda. But in the case of this plan that we're reading right now in the 119th Psalm, you know, keep in mind that this was Dode's personal choice, and he was alone. It was him against the world. You know,
I guess it's
pretty
much always that way. There's nothing new under the sun. It's always been a few people up against the masses. You know?
Yeah. So isn't it interesting that at this time you had the Israeli military that was fighting and losing to the Philistines, and that you also had the government and the religious establishment directly opposed to this one guy that matters. So he really is the example. It was one guy with God in the covenant, clinging to the Torah, that was isolated from everybody else. And look what he left us. He left us all of these marvelous Psalms, including the 119th. So when we look at it, that's how we should view it. This is one man against the world, which is kind of what God wants. You know, there's more of us today than there were with Saul. Saul didn't have many who were in agreement with it. He says this is the 91st verse. The 91st verse is part of those that is brought to us by the letter Lamed. It is a shepherd's staff. So all of this is designed to show Yahweh taking care of us, Yahweh leading us, Yahweh nurturing us, Yahweh protecting us. He says, therefore, which is law, that means not only therefore, but also to approach you. Your means to achieve justice and resolve disputes literally stands totally sustained. Indeed, they are for everyone and everything, for all of those who engage, work, and serve with you. Now, this is kind of an interesting statement. First, the law is typically, law is a preposition that means toward. It sometimes is translated other ways, like, for example, therefore, or according to, but its principal meaning is towards. So you want to approach Yahweh. The only way you can approach him is through his means to achieve justice and resolve disputes. That's the Mishpat, or, you know, Pesach, Matzah, Bukurim, Shavua, Teruah, Kippurim, and Sukkah. Seven steps to take us from the war zone that Dod was existing in, the war zone that we are now existing in, to God's home. So he says, your means to achieve justice and resolve disputes literally stands, totally sustained. This is Amad, present. They are present. They persist. They are complete. They are enduring. They are uninterrupted, call perfect. He then says, on this day. So the problem of that for Christianity is, of course, Christians say that the Torah was not enabled until Jesus Christ. And by the time that he came, then the Torah was done away because its promises were fulfilled. Well, Dod's saying that, no, to approach, your means to achieve justice and resolve disputes literally stands, totally sustained, on this day. And because the Hebrew is not stuck in time, it means that Yahweh's plan to resolve disputes so that we can be with him stands this day. That day, this day, tomorrow, yesterday, always. Indeed, they are for everyone, for all of those who engage, work, and serve with you. Abed is most often translated servant, associate, co-worker. So this is really an interesting perspective that Dod destroyed at us. He's saying that the Yahweh's means to resolve disputes are for everyone of those who engage you, who work with you, who associate with you, who work with you. I mean, he's saying that this is an active kind of a thing. It's if you're not interested in working with, serving, associating with Yahweh, then these things aren't for you. He quantified who these things are for. And that's a real distant cry from the Christian approach of, salvation is for everybody. God wants to save everybody. Dod's not saying that. In fact, he's saying that the means to approach you and resolve disputes aren't for everyone. They're for those who want to engage and work with Yahweh, who want to associate with Yahweh. If you don't want to work with him, if you don't want to associate with him, and by the way, this idea of working here, Paul's big thing is you can't work for your salvation by works of the Torah. And Dod is, this is the Abed, working with someone as their associate. So he's taking direct aim at what Paul's later going to write here. And the point I really wanted to make here is that Dod is not saying that we are working for our salvation. He is saying that those who are saved work with God. There's a different perspective here, and everyone who is saved works with God. In other words, there's nobody who is part of the covenant family who's a bump on a log. Everyone. I agree too. And by the way, in working with God is a thrill. When we don't work, we really become flabby, and we die. I don't know if you've ever watched somebody who was a gung-ho, entrepreneur, charging, or just not work for somebody else, but work 6 days a week, work 10 hours a day, was really driven to work, and they retire. What happens to them?
They die.
They die, and they die in a hurry.
Mm-hmm. I've seen it.
Yeah. Part of living is working. When you're working, you're accomplishing something. When you're working, you're building something. When you're working, you're achieving something. But this isn't work to achieve a fortune. This is not work to achieve a mighty monument. This isn't work to achieve an office that people can tell you how wonderful you are. This isn't working in the military to go off and kill somebody. This is working with Yahweh on the things that he cares about.
Yeah, can I throw something in here too?
Yeah.
I mean, it's not it's also not like going out and knocking doors and trying to get the local cools to go down to the church.
Mm-mm.
You know, I find great pleasure in sharing Yahweh's words with people.
All right.
I have to tell you, when I was part of a, you know, outfit named after Helios's daughter, I had no interest really in doing that. And if I ever did wrangle anybody in, and I did a couple of them, I didn't feel all that good about it.
Yeah.
I mean, I'll be honest with you.
Yeah.
I felt there's a completely different feeling in sharing Yahweh's words from going out and proselytizing. Big difference.
Yeah. You know, I taught evangelism, the Evangelism Explosion program that Kennedy created down there in Florida. Became a training thing, and I actually taught it and led it and went into people's homes. If somebody visited the church, we'd call them and say, you know, we'd like to return the visit. And we led them through the script of Evangelism Explosion with the leader leading it and two people being trained in it. And I remember the number of times that people prayed that prayer of salvation. And I always left thinking, oh, my God, what have I done? What have I done? Have I talked these people into this? Why did I talk these people into this? I'm not even sure I believe this. What on earth have I done? And I would actually feel guilty about it. And,
see,
of course, now I feel terribly guilty
about it. That's what I'm talking
about
here. You know, you're talking about a completely different issue, you know, and the feeling you have when you're sharing Yahweh's words as opposed to getting somebody involved in religion on any level are very different things.
Yeah, and we were quoting Paul. I mean, Evangelism Explosion is based on Paul's letters. And so that was my feeling then. When you're sharing Yahweh's Torah, prophets, and Psalms, absolute, total, and complete joy, comfort, I have never even dawned on me not to feel great about it. It's as you say, it is something that we all want to do. Once you come to know Yahweh, once you're part of His covenant, we all want to work with Him to encourage others to participate. And now you look at Dode. How was he working with Yahweh? There's only one way that Dode worked with Yahweh. I mean, I can tell you that Yahweh could care less about the Philistines. It was meaningless to him. If Yahweh wanted to eliminate the Philistines, you know, he'd go, poof, Philistines gone. There's really only one way.
Blink of an eye.
Yeah, that's right. There's only one way that Dode worked with Yahweh. And we're reading it right now. It's these Psalms. He was sharing Yahweh's words. That's how he was working with him. And, you know, I kind of, you know, we've talked in our last program, or maybe two programs ago, about how wonderful it is in the covenant not having any responsibility. And I think there is, in this covenant relationship, the ability to work as part of the family and engage and associate with the family without having personal responsibility. It's kind of the best of all worlds. We are working, but we're not responsible. And that's what Dode is communicating here, is that the means to resolve disputes, those of us who attend to these parties, where Yahweh is doing all of the work, he's throwing the party, he's hosting the party, he's paying the bill for the party, he's just inviting us to attend, that while we're there, we ought to engage. And that's what we're doing here, is we're engaging, working with Yahweh, and I think it's ubiquitous amongst everyone who becomes part of the covenant family. The next line, of course, he gets right back to the heart of the issue. Surely, if not for my enthusiasm for your Torah, then I would have been lost. If not for your enthusiasm, my enthusiasm for your Torah, I would have wandered away. I would have died. I would have been destroyed, ceasing to exist in my sin and as a result of its consequence. Dode is emphasizing here, since these are all parallel concepts, that the means to resolve disputes, which enables Dode now to, rather than being lost, being found, rather than wandering away, being on the right path, rather than having died, having to live, rather than ceasing to exist, the only reason that Dode is in this position is because of the Torah, and within the Torah, it's mitzvot, it means to resolve disputes. So he is equating here the mitzvot, the means to resolve disputes, with the Torah. And saying that the Torah is the thing that kept him on the right path. It's the thing that precluded him from being lost. It's the thing that caused him to live rather than die. And he is also acknowledging the very thing that destroys Pauline doctrine. Even Christians who don't want to besmirch the Torah like Paul does will tell you that if you don't do everything that the Torah says, that you will be condemned by the Torah. Since none of us have the capability of being perfect, therefore, everyone who tries to save themselves by doing what the Torah says is condemned. Now, Dode is saying here...
I might agree with that, you know. if that's what they think, if they think that it's about doing, okay. Yeah, okay, I'll
but
go along
their,
with that.
Their view is that if you rely on the Torah, then you have to do everything the Torah says perfectly, and if you fail
that's
to do anything
wrong.
That the Torah says, that you are condemned by the Torah. And Dode is saying the exact opposite here. Dode is saying, I got a mountain of sins. Because of my sin, as a result of my sin, as a consequence of my sin, had it not been for your Torah, I'd be dead. I'd cease to exist. So Dode is acknowledging that to be saved by the Torah, you don't have to be perfect. Because he says, I'm not perfect. I've got all of these sins. But yet, because of the Torah, I'm saved from my sin. So rather than the Torah condemning my sin, which is the Christian perspective, Dode is saying the Torah saved me from my sin. The Torah caused me to, the Torah, my enthusiasm for the Torah is what caused me to be spared the consequence of my sin. That's the opposite perspective of the Christian perspective. That the Torah is the means to salvation is what this says. Surely, if not for my enthusiasm for your Torah, then I would have been lost. I would have wandered away, and I would have died, ceasing to exist in my sin as a result of its consequence. This is stated in the negative, so you could turn it into the positive. Because of my enthusiasm for the Torah, I am alive even though I have sinned. Because of my enthusiasm
and what
for the
does
Torah,
sin,
I am found.
Kind of a good point to bring up is that sin means nothing more than missing the mark, doesn't
correct.
It? Correct. I mean,
right. Well, you know, what he's defining as sin here is not... anything other than doing something that is contrary to our father's advice in his Torah. So, sin would be in this particular
going
case.
Going to church on Sunday.
Yeah, absolutely. Being religious. And by the way, there were times when Dode played army, and sometimes even played army on the wrong side. Sometimes he allied himself with the Philistines. Sometimes he fought the Philistines. And so does say, listen, I made a lot, I have really screwed up, but my screw-ups don't matter because of my enthusiasm for the Torah. If we're enthusiastic about the Torah, our screw-ups don't matter. That's the liberty of the whole thing. That's the perspective on the whole thing. Rather than the Torah judging us, it keeps us from being judged. That's what Dode is saying here. The Torah is the means to liberate us from judgment. If you've got the Torah, you will never be judged. So rather than the Torah condemning you because you failed to do what it says, the Torah, if you're enthusiastic about the Torah, if you love the Torah, if you realize that the Torah is our Heavenly Father's guidance and you come to know it and understand it and respond to what God is asking of us, then the Torah is your means to be adopted and to be, therefore, to live with Him forever, to continue to exist. Powerful perspective that Dode is sharing with us here, and it's if the Torah was a set of laws, that would not be possible.
No,
the
Dode
only
was
way
finished. He was over
right.
with by his
right.
own words. Yeah. Yeah.
Right. If the Torah was a set of laws, then it would have condemned him because of his sin. So the only way that the Torah can be the means that caused him to be liberated from his sins and not to suffer any of the consequence of his sins is for the Torah to be God's advice on salvation. God's advice to be removed from the consequence of sin. And that's why it's so important to look at the 119th Psalm in parallel, because the previous statement explains how the Torah accomplishes that result, which is the mishpat, the means to resolve disputes. So we read this, we come to understand precisely what God is offering.
That lays several religious perspectives and delusions to waste, period.
It does. It does. Yeah, it's devastating to Christianity.
Yeah, it's devastating to rabbinic Judaism as well.
Well, it is true. That is also true. And it's devastating to Islam.
Yeah, well, yeah.
Yeah. Concerning eternity, la olam. To approach eternity or concerning eternity, la olam. I will never ignore, overlook, forget, or lose sight of the significance of your precepts, those instructions which you have entrusted to us, encouraging us to carefully examine for guidance so that we respond appropriately to you. Remember, there's four things, and now we're at verse 93, and there still remain only four things in the Torah that Dode says we should pay attention to. I mean, Dode uses Torah, teaching, instruction. He uses Dabar, Yahweh's words. He'll speak of Imrah, his promise. He'll speak of Ad, his restoring witness. But when he gets beyond just the generic terms for promise, testimony, witness, and teaching in word, he said there's these four things. And these four things permeate this presentation. We're at the 93rd verse, so more than halfway through, and we still have these same four things. He just finished with Mishpat. And now he has
the
Pekudim. Yep.
Pekudim.
And the Mitzvah.
Mitzvah, yeah.
Yep. And so the Mishpat means to resolve disputes. And he explained that because of the means to resolve disputes in the Torah, we live in spite of our sins. That those means to resolve disputes resolve the consequence of our sin. And now he's saying, you want to be part of eternity? You want to live forever? Well, God has given us instructions, prescriptions for living, which we can respond to that enable us to embrace and participate in eternity. Concerning eternity, I will never ignore, overlook, nor forget about, never lose sight of your Pekudim. These prescriptions that enable us, to guide us so that we can respond appropriately to you. So that indeed, by them, you will restore me to life, nurture me, renew me, and cause me to grow to the point that I experience the complete fullness of life. Chaya. I've shared this with you before, and for everybody that's listened to you, listening now, you've heard this admission. The way that I came to define mitzvah, choke, misfat, and pakudim was I looked at all of the possible definitions based upon the roots of those words, and particularly looking at the verb root, the actionable form of the word, and I chose those actions that were consistent with Yahweh's purpose, personality, and the context of the discussion, and I discarded the others. All right, so that was the thought process in achieving this, and occasionally in that process, you know, there's some times where scholars could say, you know, most of the dictionaries say that mitzvah means command. And there are some statements where I wouldn't have a leg to stand on to defend my answer other than, you know, but the verbal root speaks of a condition of a relationship. On the pakudim or the mitzvah, for example, on the mitzvah, somebody might say, you know, mitzvah is a judgment. But when mitzvah is used, as it has been in this psalm, in conjunction with tzedak, which means vindication, which means to be made innocent, then my definition, which is based on the verbal root of the word, to resolve disputes, it's really hard, in fact, probably impossible, for someone to argue with that definition in context of becoming upright, righteous, and innocent, tzedak. And the previous statement where mitzvot was used as the remedy that caused Dod, in spite of his sins, to be on the right path and to exist, to continue to live, that definition is affirmed. In this case, the definition of pakudim as Yahweh's prescriptions for living that guide us so that we can respond appropriately to Him, which is based on the verbal root of the word. That certainly is affirmed when Dod says, it's because that I never overlook them, because I value them, because I never forget about them, is the reason that I can the very reason that I'm being restored to life. Now, how would you like to argue with that definition in that context? And what kind of an argument could you bring against that definition of pakudim when Dod says, it's because I never overlook your prescriptions that enable me to respond appropriately to you is why I'm going to be restored to life. It's why I'm being nurtured, renewed, caused to live, experiencing the fullness of life. So one of the things that I love about the 119th Psalm is that if you take the time to study the verbal roots and the etymology of these four critical words, and you come to the most reasonable explanation of them, and then you apply those definitions consistently throughout this psalm, you will find statements where those are the only definitions that work. There is no other way to define the word that works in this statement other than that. And then what you get is this great sense of calm and satisfaction and comfort and confidence that, it was consistent. This is His nature.
Absolutely. And that's why Torah isn't law.
It's
There's a whole, there's a lot of reasons, but and we all know Yahweh doesn't command us to do anything. He might highly suggest.
Why don't you tell me, Larry or James, a law that restores someone to life? There's lots of laws that if violated, kill people. But I want you to tell me about a country that has a law or a religion that has a law that restores somebody who is dead to life. Can you tell me a law that actually exonerates someone who is guilty? Don't laws condemn?
I was going to say, most laws condemn you.
And there are laws, when you violate them, you are put to death.
Yeah.
Is there any law that you are aware of that causes a dead person to live? Is there a law that you're aware of that says, okay, you've committed all of these crimes, but according to this law, it doesn't matter?
No.
No. No. So these last three statements that we have just considered prove emphatically that Torah cannot be law, because there is no law that restores life. There is no law that is capable of liberating in this way.
Provides freedom. Laws, government, they're there to limit freedom. They're never there to advance.
Yeah. Oh, you know, somebody wrote a stay of execution. But a stay of execution only delays your execution. What Dode is not talking about here that my execution is being delayed. He's saying that as the consequence of my sin, I should be dead. I should be killed. But because of the Torah, rather than getting what I deserve, which is to die, I am never going to die. I'm going to live forever. So it's a person who is condemned to die never dies, is exonerated from the consequence of their actions. All right, next we have the 94th statement here, also brought to us by the letter Lamed, which is the shepherd's staff. It also begins with law. Now, law can be, as I shared, according to you, therefore, so according to, therefore, although its principal meanings is to approach. And this was written with you, so it's which is the second person, masculine, singular. So according to you, or to approach you. So the most direct, you know, it's kind of interesting that the Lamed is based upon the Hebrew, it's Lamed is just, law is just the letter Lamed. And so the shepherd's staff, the letter designed by the shepherd's staff, if you just have the letter by itself, just Lamed, all by itself, it means to approach. To approach. So all of these are shared under the letter Lamed, which means to approach. So to approach you, since this was has you associated with it, to approach you, I have been saved. Now, that's set so much better than, and, you know, I understand that law can be, according to you, I have been saved. You can render law according to. But think about how much more profound it is here, to approach you, I have been saved. I mean, that's much more profound. What that is saying is that the entire purpose of our salvation is so that we can approach Yahweh. So think about it this way. What is the purpose of the first two steps to Yahweh, Pesach and Matzah?
That's obviously this eternal life,
Yahweh,
and to perfect,
right,
you.
Right. One makes us eternal. The other one makes us perfect in God's eyes. And that's the means to salvation, right? And what does it lead to? Bukurim, being adopted into God's family. You can't get any closer to God than being part of his family. Bukurim, firstborn child. And so what this is saying is that the only reason that we're being saved is to approach God, is to be with Him. That's the only reason we're being saved. But that the perspective of that is so profoundly different than the religious perspective. The religious perspective is, I want to be saved because I want to avoid hell. The purpose of being saved is to be kept out of hell, right?
Yeah.
That's the religious perspective.
Yeah.
It's, you are saved not because of where you're going, but because of what you're avoiding. And here he's saying, the only reason you're saving me is so that I can approach you. So, to approach you, I have been saved. You know, it's like salvation was just one of the things that God had to do to enable His children to live with Him. Okay, you know, I'm cool with that. I'm glad to be saved. But the entire purpose of being saved is so that we can spend time with Yahweh. Now, why would you want to even do that unless you knew Him and liked Him?
Also. Anything beyond that would be phony. So, yeah,
correct.
you have to appreciate where he's coming from. I mean, you know, we have to look at his perspective of, okay, he writes these words, and he sends them through time.
Right.
Realizing full well most people are going to disregard them.
Mm-hmm.
It's a big deal to him when somebody takes them seriously. I think.
Absolutely, because there's so few of us that do. And there, occasionally I allow myself, and I don't do this very often, but occasionally I allow myself to try to view God's response to what we're doing. And if you think for a moment that God put himself out there to create this universe, knowing that the creation in that universe, the life form that he was going to give life to and a conscience to and free will to, would reject him 999 times out of 1,000, and maybe even 1,000 times worse than that. In fact, 1,000 times worse than that. And yet he was still going to put it all on the line. He was going to share everything that that was important for us to know, and put it all there in the line as to why he was doing it and who he is. And he's going to make this, he's going to ask all of us to join him, knowing that virtually everyone is going to spit in his face and say no. And that worse than that, they're going to create false gods and attribute everything that he has done to a false god. Under those circumstances, wouldn't you be, like, super excited when some people get together on the seventh day and say, "Hey, God, we really like this stuff. This is really great. I mean, I love you. Your teaching is terrific. These words are inspiring. I just love this stuff." Now, if you were, can't you imagine God just being absolutely excited about that?
Absolutely. That's why the words were put there, to draw people of their own volition towards him and his true nature, who he is, what he's all about, what it is he wants, which is association, according to him.
You know, Larry, I started once I graduated from school in sales, and I was told, go off and sell these housewares products to these retail establishments. And the ones that you get are the ones that the rest of us have never been able to sell anything to. And by the way, you've got to go find your own list of potential customers. And I came up with a very systemized approach so that, because when I tried to call people for appointments, no one would give me an appointment because they didn't know who I was. They didn't have any time for me. So I'd have to make cold calls. And I figured out a way that I could make between 15 and 20 cold calls a day. And I got told no between 15 and 20 times a day. And I got told no between 15 and 20 times a day for a year. You know how unbelievable, painful, debilitating, draining that was to have been told no 99.9% of the time? 20 times a day, 6 days a week for a year?
Yeah, that's a nightmare. Pretty debilitating.
Right. You know, and I'm offering, I'm trying to sell trinkets. Now God is trying to offer eternal life. He's inviting us to parties. He's created the whole universe, and he's offering us the opportunity to be enriched, to be empowered, to be adopted by him, to be perfected and to live with him forever, inherit everything he has to give. He is, I mean, I was selling trinkets. He's offering the universe. He's offering it for free. And yet he's being told no, not 6 days a week for a year. He's being told no for 6,000 years, every day for 6,000 years. And it's only one in a million that's saying yes. Now, under
that's
that
a
circumstance,
big deal. That's a
yeah,
big
I remember
deal.
How excited I was when somebody finally said yes. Now, multiply that by a million, million, million. And that's what a single yes means to Yahweh. And what we're doing here is as members of his family all saying yes. Big time excitement.
I would venture to say, I mean, this mm-hmm. is just a guess, this is the largest group of family in the world today.
Yeah, I would bet so. I would agree with you. I would.
I'd lay money on it.
Yeah. Really, and by the way, I would love to be wrong. I don't take any pride in that. I'd love to be wrong. I don't think so. I agree with you. I think it's true. And I think that not only that is it true, but that it is bringing Yahweh enormous pleasure. And it's not because we're special. It's because so few people love. You know, when Dode began this, it says, you know, I am enthusiastic about your Torah. It's my enthusiasm for. How many people out there are enthusiastic for his testimony, his Torah, his teaching, his guidance? Not very many.
No, it's a rare thing. And that's why so many of us end up, you know, alone on called out days. This is what happens, you know.
And one of the things, too, is you mentioned that you love sharing his words. You know, when you realize, that's why what Don's statement last week on Shattering Myths was so profound, when he talked about once you come to recognize that Hebrew, because it's not stuck in time, that it's eternally true, that Hebrew, because of its relational stems, because of its volitional moods, and its eternal nature, once you recognize that Yahweh is communicating to us using this marvelous Hebrew language, then his words aren't just his words. They're him. When you're sharing Yahweh's testimony, you're not just sharing Yahweh's testimony. You're sharing Yahweh. Here he is. You know, to approach you, I have been saved. That's Yahweh right there. When I read that, you know what I see? I see God's arms being open and say, yeah, okay, so I've got some flaws, but you don't see any of them. So your arms are wide open, and I get to run right into your arms, and you're going to wrap them around me. That's what I see there. To approach you, I have been saved. And so it's not just words. It's an image of these words represent Yahweh and his nature. Indeed, because I have genuinely searched and pondered your precepts, your teaching, your principles, your instructions that enable us to respond rationally to you. So, he's been saved to approach Yahweh, and the reason that this has occurred is because he has genuinely searched and pondered the Pekudim, the teaching, the guidance that Yahweh has provided that enable us to respond appropriately to him. You know, there's not a lot of things that God asks us to respond to, but I can think of, in fact, I really can think of very few things that God has asked us to respond to. He's asked us to respond to his Torah by observing it, and by listening to his testimony. So he's asked us to respond to that. He's asked us to respond to his invitations to meet with him 7 times a year. He's asked us to respond to the terms and conditions of the covenant. What else has he asked us to respond to?
Nothing.
So here's Dode saying, to approach you, I have been saved because I have responded to the guidance that enables us to properly respond to you. So that guidance that enables us to respond appropriately to you has to be comprised of only, unless there's something else that I'm missing. JB, you're quiet here, but is there anything that God's asking us to respond to other than his 7 annual meetings, his Torah instructions, and the conditions of his covenant?
Those are the only ones I can think of.
Which means that if we were to define Pakudim, it would be those things. But if you were to say, all right, but we already have mitzvah, which are the conditions of the covenant, and we already have mitzvot, which are the invitations to meet with God. So Pakudim, therefore, has to be the broad spectrum of the guidance that's inherent in Yahweh's Torah. Which means that if you want to pakud, let's just state the word. If you want to pakud, like Dode is pakuding, then you need to approach the Torah by observing it and listening to what God has to say. Focused with your mind focused on those things that enable us to respond to Him. That's your mindset. The wicked, he says, who remain liable for their sins, hope and expect to destroy me. So I protect myself by diligently examining, properly considering, and actually understanding your eternal testimony, your restoring witness, the Edah. So Dode says, I am exonerated from the consequence of my sin. I'm not going to have any, there's not going to be a consequence of my sin. I'm going to live forever. Because of my enthusiasm for the Torah. But he's saying that those who are opposed to Dode, they're going to be liable for their sin. Now, that infers something. What that infers is that all of Dode's opposition were Torahless. Right? Because if they were with Torah, then their sins would be resolved too. So that means that all of Dode's enemies, for them to remain liable for their sins, it's not that they're interpreting the Torah differently. It's not that they're holding the Torah differently. It's not that they're approaching the Torah differently. It's that they're without the Torah. And so if...
Which shouldn't be surprising here because they're his enemies.
Correct.
You know, I mean, really, I mean, if they embrace the Torah, that there's no way they would be Dode's enemy. I mean,
correct.
Really.
You know, I've told you that well, there's a lot of family, of course, that I want to meet in heaven when we enter God's home. But of the personages that we've had the opportunity to study, but far and away, the person I want to meet is Dode. I really do. I mean, I can't wait to meet this guy. So, you know, if you love the Torah, you can't help but love Dode. And I remember, you know, prior to understanding the Torah's role, I can't remember looking at, in fact, Don called in Shattering Mist the other day and said, you know, Dode goes from rascal to far worse. I mean, he's a bad boy.
Oh, rascal's putting things pretty lightly. They're, you know,
with Dode.
I mean,
yeah, with Dode.
Rascal, that's pretty pretty light, yeah.
Pretty light when it comes to Dode. And yet, this is the of all the people that are presented in, as one of Yahweh's witnesses, he's the first guy that I want to meet.
Oh, I can imagine that. And by the way, it's a little confusing as a Christian because I thought... You know, I mean, I'd hear about disciples and this and that, but I thought the guy you'd want to really be like would be Dode. You know, I really thought that. Of course, I said David at the time, but I really thought that. And my thinking was so, you know, clouded.
Right.
My judgment was so bad that I thought it was because he would stand up to an army.
Right. Yeah.
You know, I mean, that's what I thought. You know,
right,
I mean,
and that's about as far as anybody wants to get in Christianity. That's about as far as they want to take David. So, like the statue of the David that Michelangelo carved. What does it show him?
The one where he's not circumcised, that one?
Yes, yeah. It shows him with his slingshot, doesn't it? It shows him holding a slingshot.
Yeah,
that's really as far as Christians want to go with him, as Onward Christian Soldier, you know? With
really
the God,
did,
you can throw the sling and defeat your enemies. I mean, that's as far as they want to go, because Dode in the flesh is the antithesis of Pauline doctrine. I mean, he is an adulterer, a fornicator, a liar, a murderer. I mean, he's a bad dude, right? So they can't go beyond the slingshot. And yet, for the rest of us, when we come to know that Dode was deeply flawed in terms of his behavior, it's liberating. It's not a concern. I am thrilled that Dode was a scoundrel. And you might say, well, why would you be so pleased that Dode was a scoundrel?
No, I know why that is.
Yeah, because I'm a scoundrel. Mm-hmm. And now I know for certain that being a scoundrel is immaterial to God, because the Torah is the remedy.
Right. And I mean, that's where we can
His
be
behavior is perfect because it's so imperfect. And God is taking
David,
the least perfect person in the world, to tell us, oh, by the way, your behavior doesn't mean diddly squat. It's all about responding to the Torah.
Yeah, and by the way, had Dode been perfect, we wouldn't have been too happy reading this. You know,
right, we wouldn't.
If he'd have been pious or
weird. Oh, goodness, right, right,
yeah.
Right. But Dode is an
absolute
flawed.
By the way, you know, I mean, I know I can sound a little crass. I don't go out of my way other than to not look religious.
Right.
I mean, I'll do things. I'll go out of my way to not appear to be religious.
Yeah, you and me both.
I really will. And,
yeah.
At the same time, I don't mean harm or disrespect, and I'm not, you know, I'll disrespect religion, of course, but I don't mean to come down on people hard. I had a woman this week that approached me, and how do I know what's true? How do I know? I said, you know, this is what I said. I said, why don't you read yada yada, study it, and you know, draw your own conclusions. Why don't you look at Yahweh's words in extant form, and look at all the different possibilities for those words, and make up your own decision.
Right.
And she said she was afraid she could make a mistake. And I said, well, everybody makes mistakes. So it's, you know, Yahweh
expects. Including the guy that composed it from Yahweh's testimony.
That's why you're into the seventh edition or whatever.
Yeah.
You know. Yeah, it's very important people understand their perfection isn't a part of this.
That is exactly right. So what if you, do you think that Dode didn't make a few mistakes? Yeah, he went from rascal to scoundrel. I mean, that's the beauty of the whole thing. You're right.
More than a few.
Yes, but what was
more than the hairs on his head were his words.
Yeah, exactly. To your point also, the next thing out of Dode's mouth is, so I protect myself by diligently examining and properly considering and actually understanding your eternal and restoring testimony. So bien ida. Bien means that you transition from knowledge to understanding by making connections. And so the advice of, well, if we study Yahweh's testimony and we think about it, you know, and you mentioned yada yada. Yada yada, introduction to God, similar. What they're designed to do is to empower someone to study Yahweh's testimony so that they make connections. You know, I'm all the time someone asks, you know, why don't you just do the translations and do more translations and do less commentary? Because Yahweh's testimony was written for BN. It was written for us to try to understand it by making connections. If I were just doing the translations and not writing the associated commentary to make the connections, then I wouldn't be doing it the way Dode's doing it. He didn't write it so that we could just read it. He wrote it so that we could study it, so we could think about it, so we could come to understand it by making these connections. And that really is the purpose of all of those books, is here's what he said. Think about it.
Let me ask you something. When somebody's off the Torah, you know, when they're out there preaching any form of religion,
right,
and pretending, you know, that they're teaching, you know, what Yahweh said, how many seconds does it take you to catch that?
Oh, a nanosecond.
If it takes more than 15 seconds, there's something wrong with you.
A fraction of a second. You can almost hear it in the tone of their voice as they begin. You can almost hear it there. James, let me ask you a question. You spent an enormous amount of time translating Bar Reshith. And you were committed initially to translating it, but not providing the thought process or sharing the insights that you were garnering along the way. You stopped, didn't you?
Yeah. Ended up having to write a lot of commentary and just couldn't. It can't help but want to share when you're going through it.
Exactly. In fact, I find it, if someone were to tell me, why don't you just make the translation, my answer is I can't. I mean, I absolutely couldn't. If you were to tell me that all I want you to do is start at the beginning and just do the translation and spend the same amount of time but just doing the translation, my answer is I genuinely can't do it. I'm incapable of doing it because when I'm doing it, all of these insights and connections and means to understand just flood my mind. And if I wasn't sharing that, I would have no interest in doing it. That's the whole. And sometimes I'm writing it down just for me because I want to. It's helpful when you write things down and you've done the connections, you've done the research, you write it down. Then you retain it. You know, I've always realized that if you engage more than just your words, but you engage your mind, you type something, you engage more of yourself into something, you have a tendency to remember it. All of Yahweh's testimony is written so that we can be in. This is what Dode is saying here. How does he protect himself from those who want to destroy him? By BN.
He runs to the
Ida. Yeah, BN Ida. I examine. I make connections. This whole psalm, from beginning to end, it is about Dode making connections, linking things together to help us transition from knowing the Torah to understanding the Torah so we can respond to God. That's the whole purpose of this. That's the fun part. It really is. That's the fun part.
Yeah, well, when you find major things, you know, when you find, you know, that as an example, there wasn't a physical resurrection in all your life,
right,
you were led to believe that, and then you can see, wow, that was really stupid for me to think that, you know.
But
and,
the
and
other
of
part of it is far
it
better. You know, it's the one thing, okay, that was stupid for me to think that, because it's in conflict with everything. But the other side of it is actually the good side of it, which is when you recognize there wasn't a physical resurrection, but instead there was an integration of spirit and soul so that the Bukurim Yahusha is exactly as we're going to be. We're going to be this interaction between spirit and soul that will enable us to go anywhere, do anything, be anywhere, and yet if we wish to be stuck in the ordinary flow of time and chat and eat, we can. And then if we wish to materialize the next second up there in heaven, well, we can do that too. So there was the profound part of that isn't that we – listen, I don't want to dismiss the fact that being freed from a deception is a good thing. And I love being freed from a lie. That's a good thing. But it's vastly more profound to know that the truth about Bokoram and what happened there and how it's going to influence us is that we're going to have the best of both worlds. We are an energy-based combination of spirit and soul, but at any time that we choose, we can still stop the moment. You know, if we want to sit around the campfire and sing songs and eat good food and drink good wine and enjoy the warmth of the fire and hear the wind through the trees, we can do it. You know, it's one thing for...
About empowerment. You're talking about the difference between empowerment and just, quote, being saved.
Yeah.
You know,
or the difference
that
between...
goes back to being saved from going from hell.
Yeah. The difference between just being empowered and being enriched. I mean, that's an enriching experience that we're going to be able to have. We are empowered, but it's an enriching empowerment.
Sure.
You know, it's one thing for us. Yeah, in eternity. Speaking of relationships, in eternity, we're going to be able to communicate much more effectively than we are now. And that's going to be cool, right? Go off and explore something and have a debate about it and talk about it and look at various angles on it and go off and explore. But don't you think that occasionally, like, you know, shaking hands, sharing a good wine with somebody, don't you think that's going to be even more meaningful?
Well, you're talking about things we don't haven't felt and done and stuff like that.
Right.
Who knows? Yeah, it probably is.
Yeah,
but there. You know, there's got to be a million aspects to this we don't know. So
yeah,
the fact you could even do it, of course, is amazing.
Yeah,
I mean that's pretty amazing. I mean, you know, you think back to when you were a Christian or involved in whatever religion, doesn't matter. And what did you really think? You know, being a part of heaven was about. It sounded pretty dreary.
I can tell you as a Christian. Other than avoiding hell, I never thought about what heaven was going to be like because the Christian portrayal of heaven did not seem like fun to me.
Hey, I mean, you're talking
pretended.
About... Yeah, sure. Everybody's deluding themselves. I mean, think about it. You're a spirit-based form, right? And they're talking about streets of gold. Well, what would that be worth to you? You know, nothing.
Yeah, really. Yeah.
I mean,
what
really?
Would be having a really big mansion and heaven be worth to me?
Nothing.
Well, you know, I've got a big house. Now, so what am I going to gain? That's not appealing to me. I would much rather have a tent and a sleeping bag in the mountains overlooking a beautiful scene with those that I enjoy camping out with and exploring with, then I would have a stuffy old mansion. I've been in the really big mansions in the, in Newport, Rhode Island. God, I hate them. I mean, they're gilded, they're really fancy. They suffocate me. I'd much rather be in the tent with family. So you know the Christian depictions of heaven. God, I want nothing to do with them.
Yeah, they're pretty lame. especially, I mean, considering. I mean, I never even really considered it. When I was a Christian, but I mean, consider hell. You know what I mean? You're a spirit based form. Okay, fire couldn't harm you. I mean, Could it? I mean, it doesn't seem likely to me. I mean, the whole concepts are they're warped, and they have to be. You know, they have to be. I mean, you're talking about relationship versus fear here, right? And so, and you're talking about empowerment versus that minimal threshold of being saved and not going to hell. I mean, every perspective changes as you start opening up those words and they start becoming available to you.
Yeah.
So.
And when you transition from knowing what God said to understanding what he said, this next statement, the closing statement brought to us by the letter approach, Levet, the shepherd's staff, resonates. I also share Dode's perspective here. He says, I have genuinely seen the limits, the end of all created things. Extraordinarily boundless, comprehensive, and utterly limitless are the terms and conditions of your covenant agreement. Now, what do you think he means there? What is he talking about there?
He's talking about, you know, the physical, the eras.
Right.
You know, they come to an end.
Right. And everything that is alive dies.
Right.
And there is a time where the entire universe, Dode is saying, I have seen the end of the universe. Do you think that Yahweh took him to the moment that he was doing away with this universe and created a new one? Or do you think Dode did this by reading the Torah and saying, oh, yeah, that's what God is saying there. I get what this means, so I understand it, so in my mind's eye, I can see it, an end to all of creation.
I mean, it's the latter of the two. He never said that Yahweh took him anywhere and showed him anything.
Right, because by the way,
like
I've seen it. I've seen it. I have witnessed in my mind God with his covenant family, all of us there, enjoying watching him do away with this universe and creating a new one. I've seen it in my mind's eye. I'm sure it's going to be vastly more spectacular when we actually see it. But in my mind's eye, I've seen it. And this next part is the even more profound part. It's the only thing that endures after that point is the covenant. The terms and conditions of the covenant is the only thing that endures, that transcends the end of this universe. Because the covenant family is the only thing of value. The only thing that God is taking away from this universe. And now he's mentioning the terms and conditions. Well, there aren't just five terms and conditions of the covenant. We always talk about five. There's ten. Because Yahweh's benefits associated with the covenant are every bit as much a term and condition of the covenant. It's conditional upon Yahweh to give us eternal life, to make us perfect, to adopt us into his family, to enrich us, to empower us. You know, it's incumbent upon him to do those things. That's what endures. But it what else endures? Us walking away from religion and politics. Forever we're going to be separated from it. Forever we're going to be trusting and relying on Yahweh. Forever we're going to be perfected by him. You know, it's forever we are going to be observing the terms and conditions of the mitzvah because they are the means that God is using to make eternity fun. So the only thing that survives, according to Dode, is the covenant. That's it. That means, by the way, that Yahweh is part of the covenant. That means that his teaching is part of the covenant. It means the one thing that's going to survive. We're it. The whole universe is going away. The only thing that's going to be left is the covenant. Wow. So, you know, how many times we've said it on these various programs that the only reason God created the universe was because he wanted to have a covenant family. That was the only reason. And now Dode is saying that. He says, the entire universe, all of creation, is going to cease. It's going to come to an end. And the only thing that's going to remain is the one thing that God created it all for, his family. And that the promises, the terms and conditions of that covenant endure forever. Well, that's about as good
as it gets. Then that would make sense. That would make sense. I mean, sure.
So, Dode is saying, okay, I've studied the Torah. He did, the last thing he said by studying God's Torah, and trying to understand it, making the connections, this was his conclusion. His conclusion is that the only thing that endures this universe, the only thing that survives this universe, the only thing that transcends the universe, is the covenant. Which means that the only reason the universe was created was for the covenant. That there is nothing else of value. Nothing. It's the only thing of value is the covenant. And either you're part of God's family or you're not.
Well, that's what's going to play out into eternity. So no matter what somebody thinks holds value today, it's not going to be here other than the covenant, other than the relationships developed there and the friendships and all that. So,
and for example, for Yahweh to live up to his promise to enrich and empower us, to enrich us in particular, it's incumbent upon him once he destroys this universe to create a new one so that we can go out and explore it together. We can live in it together. We can enjoy it together. It's part of the enrichment. So it's
words were sent out, to us to take advantage of, because there's going to be a handful of people that do it, thousands, I guess. And considering all the billions that have lived on the planet, that's not many. But they count, each and every one of them.
Yep. So. When I have said that the only reason that God created the universe is because he wanted to adopt family. He wanted to adopt sons and daughters into his family so that he could take care of us and enjoy us as a father does with sons and daughters. Dode has just affirmed that. And his next statement, and this will be the end of our program tonight. He says, oh, how I love your Torah. All day, this day, and every day. She provides me with the information I need to respond properly. Oh, how I love your Torah. But he came to realize that the Torah exists as the universe exists to facilitate Yahweh's covenant family. And that's why he loves it. I love it for the same reason. And while it's meaningless perhaps to repeat, but no one loves laws. But it is indeed appropriate to love something that causes you to be adopted into God's family, and that's the purpose of the Torah. Oh, how I love your Torah. All day, this day, every day, the Torah provides me with the information I need to respond properly. That certainly is consistent with the Torah being teaching, guidance, instruction, and direction. It is direction that we respond to. It is guidance that we respond to. It is teaching that we respond to. He is reinforcing exactly what Torah means, why it exists. Oh my goodness, we have been given a wonderful gift. Well, my friend Larry, I actually have a wife in town, and she is.
Congratulations!
Many of you know that while we're trying to sell both homes so we can live together under one roof, we unfortunately neither house takes care of itself. So while we're trying to sell both, one of us has to be at both homes most of the time, and hopefully we'll get one of these two sold. But right now, my wife is out here in Central California, so I'm going to go take her to dinner.
Well, congrats.
Yeah, you enjoy
get
that.
Them, man.
Yeah, I do. You know, I'm a lucky guy. I love my wife, and we have a wonderful relationship, and so I am a lucky guy, and so I'm going to go on out tonight and take my wife out to dinner. So, fellas,
we'll have a New York strip on me.
Yeah, I genuinely love sharing Dode's song with to the Torah as a way to begin the Shabbat. Good night, guys.
Hey, good night.
Happy Shabbat. Okay, happy Shabbat. Bye-bye.
Thanks. Bye-bye.